If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey, what's going on, Rugby Rant fans? It's the Hammer. And I've been chomping at the bit for months to get this podcast happening. And it's taken a little bit of work because you got to coordinate three people's very busy lives and busy schedules. But we made it happen. We're fitting it in just in the nick of time. And I don't think we could pick a better time to do this than right now on the eve of the MLR Championship. So let me introduce who we're sitting down with and where we are today for this one-off podcast. We're not doing much like this. We don't do any remote stuff. We've done a little bit here and there, did stuff at the Blaze. We're going to be doing stuff again. And let me just plug it now at Reggie's on November 1st. Make sure you can click on the link below. You can get your table reserved. Food and drink are included with some of the costs. So you can go ahead and click on that and get a table or at least get yourself in the house. Starts at 9 o'clock on the 1st and goes all the way through the evening. Even if you don't have a ticket to the game, you can stay at Reggie's and watch the entirety of the All Blacks versus Ireland test match at Soldier Field. It's going to be exciting. And then if you are going to the event, you can get on the Reggie's tour bus. It'll take you right to the pitch, drop you off, pick you up. You don't have to drive. It's an absolutely beautiful thing. So thanks to my good mate, Norm Smythe, for putting this on. And Reggie's, obviously, Tighthead Brewing. Guinness is involved. So a lot of great people involved in this event. Awesome stuff. So nevertheless, like I said, I want to talk about this pod today and what we have happening here because it is super special. And I'm playing around with my graphics because I'm not as good as Scott is at the production side of things. Nevertheless, there we go. Nevertheless, I've got two special guests and we're at one of the special guests' home. And so I'll introduce him first. We got Steve Vanderwaat. Steve, welcome to the Rugby Rant Podcast.
Thank you very much. Great to be here.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure. And just real quick, why don't you tell the story about how this came about or where this started?
So back in 1995, when the Rugby World Cup, when South Africa won the Rugby World Cup, I was fortunate enough to get a signed rugby ball. And I became a collector globally of rugby memorabilia. And my requirements are that it has to be one of three in the world, anything to do with the Springboks, and unique to me as a collector. So I set the bar pretty high, and after 30 years, as of last week, I have now built a rugby shrine and something that I'm incredibly proud of to highlight my passion for South African rugby.
Absolutely. And so it was, I think, at the NOLA Gold game, of course, we were watching the hounds, and we'll introduce Tim Sweel in just a moment. But we were watching hounds, and Steve coming up to me after the game, and he said, "Hey, you got to do a podcast for my bar." And I said, "Oh, you own a bar?" He goes, "Yeah, it's in my house." And then he started showing me pictures, and we'll get some. We'll turn that camera here in a little while and show you some of what's here. And from there, the kind of idea started. And one of my ideas, as I thought about doing this podcast from Steve's house, was to involve somebody that would, taking all these pieces of memorabilia in, would have an appreciation for it. And there are two players on the team of South African roots. Of course, Giannis Venter is one of them. And then one of the newest members of the Chicago Hounds here in 2025, none other than fly half and fullback, Tim Sweel. Tim, welcome to the show, mate.
Thank you, Rob. Thanks so much for having me. I was kind of so shocked walking in here. This is amazing. This shrine of memorabilia collected over 30 years. It's pretty impressive. And thank you so much for having me.
Well, thanks for making the trip out. I mean, we're out in the suburbs. So Tim had to make quite a jaunt to get out here, but we appreciate him coming. And the reason why I thought of him is simply because he has that cross connection. Not only did he play in South Africa for many years with, you know, in the Vodacom Cup and in Super Rugby. Heck, I can go down some of his CV there, played with the Western Province, played with the Sharks, played in Currie Cup, played in the Super Rugby. And then he went over to the UK where he played with Harlequins, was 2016, 2017, 133 points with 18 starts, played for Newcastle, went back to South Africa, played with the Stormers, Western Province, played in Japan with Tokyo Shoki, Edinburgh, back to series, and then, of course, with the Chicago Hounds. So he's well-heeled, and that's why I thought he would have an appreciation for this, just because he's played so much as rugby all around the world, and we'll talk about this collection. And the rundown is we want to talk to him. He's our special guest here today at this Baca Shrine, right? And we're going to talk to him about his career, how he ended up here in Chicago and his rugby roots. But then we'll get into, the semifinal results. We'll try not to cry or shed a tear, but we'll talk about that. And we'll talk about, of course, the final, and we'll each talk about our predictions. And then we'll take a moment just to kind of take a couple of the unique pieces that Steve has here and show them off and talk about which ones for us resonate and that we like. And I think that's where we're really interested in digging into Steve and Tim's background and expertise to find out what they think is super unique and special. We're going to do that in just a minute. So stick around. We're going to come back. But of course, we want to hear a word from our sponsors at Macron. And before I get to that, do remember, with one match left, that Wales signed Wales jersey is on offer for the champion in 2025 Super Brew contest. Thanks again, Tim Brown. And thank you for Macron for getting us those great goodies. So we'll be back in just a moment. And we're back. So we've got Tim Sweel here, of course, played a lot of rugby in South Africa for some absolutely historic teams and teams that are well-known in South African rugby. Played in the UK for, Harlequins. I don't know that there's a more iconic English team. Same with Newcastle. I mean, in the day, Newcastle were lights out. They were awesome. You know, I'm old enough to remember when Lawrence Lalio played for him. So that shows you my age. But I want to talk to Tim about his career and his start, because he has that unique crossover in that he South African roots, but born in the UK. So Tim, first question I had for you that I want to ask you about is, you know, you're born in the UK, Taunton, England. How did you end up on your road to rugby and on your road to pro rugby? How did you end up in South Africa?
Yeah, so my parents are South African. In 1993, when I was born, my parents literally flew over to the UK, had me born, and flew straight back. So all the great opportunities I got in the UK with my rugby, it came from that kind of, you know, having that privilege of my parents doing that. And even like going there post playing in South Africa when I was 20, 21, I wouldn't have been able to go and play in England because at that stage, you would have had to have only played for the Springboks, well, not only, but play for the Springboks to play in the UK. But because I had the passport, I was lucky enough to go. So, coming from South Africa, we're a rugby proud nation, as you can see in this beautiful place. Yeah. We've obviously been very successful with the four World Cup victories. But my love for rugby grew at such a young age, and there's some rugby balls that I recognize from when I was a lighty, we call it, a youngster, going to Newlands and watching things like the Bankfin Curry Cup. I remember that sponsor from back in the day. My love for the game just grew there. Went to a rugby school in Cape Town, and kept on growing. From there, I just, you know, I've loved it ever since.
And what school was that for the crowd? Like?
I went to Bishops, which is a proud rugby school. We're known for running the ball behind our dead ball line. So I had to kind of work on my kicking game post rugby. And when I was 16, I also actually went on exchange to Dulwich College, which is in London. So I've had a very South African UK kind of mix with my kind of upbringing, my years in rugby.
Nice. And Steve, were you aware of the rugby going on down there in Cape Town and at that school?
Absolutely. So Bishops is one of the iconic rugby schools in South Africa, certainly in the top five, and probably the one of the best English speaking rugby schools in South Africa. And it is not uncommon for 5,000 to 10,000 people to show up on a Saturday to watch the first rugby team play at another local school. So very, very proud rugby heritage that comes out of many, many Springboks have come from Bishops.
Yeah. Impressive. That's impressive. Awesome. So I guess on that note, Tim, what was your most enduring memory, you know, from when you were a wee lad all the way up to the point where, you know, you decided to go to the UK and play professionally there? Mm. What was that memory that kind of is seared into your brain that you'll never forget, you know, as long as your wits are about you?
Yeah. I mean, for me, definitely my best memory was being a mascot for the Stormers, running out when Corne Kriger played his 50th game for the Stormers. And then coming back in 2020 after going to England for 6 or so years and then getting my debut for the Stormers. So I kind of left South Africa before having made my debut for my local team, Stormers. You know, you get Western Province, which is the more, they play in the domestic competition, then Stormers play in the international competition, which is either Super Rugby or now URC. So for me, that was definitely a highlight. It was it's all I ever wanted to do. And then I actually left South Africa, still trying to chase that dream, but I couldn't really realize it because I was away from South Africa. Then came back around COVID time. My dad passed away. Came back home and then managed to get my debut for the Stormers.
So what motivated you to move from South Africa to the UK and play professional rugby in the Prem?
Well, for me, obviously that experience going on exchange and playing at Dulwich College, I really enjoyed my time there. And then also there was a bit of a controversial moment when I'd made the South African under 20 team. So proud to have made that. And I'd also made the South African schools team under 18, which was another one of my proudest moments in my career. And then I ended up pulling out of that under 20 competition because South Africa changed the rule to having the under 20s as the second national team, which meant I would have been country locked. Oh. So these UK opportunities and even going to Japan as a category B, which is a foreigner that's not an internationally capped player, all these things, in hindsight, I probably did make the right decision. But at the time, it was very tough, you know, and I'd ask some of these guys I see on the wall, I'd ask some advice from them. And they were like, look, 4 or 5 games, it is very tough, but maybe keep your options open. And I did that. And in hindsight, it's hard to say, was it a great decision or not so good one? So that was another kind of factor that made me realize or think about maybe going to explore why I made that decision. So yeah, and looking back, I always say the ultimate would have been to play for the Springboks, but the second best option would be using rugby to travel the world and experience new cultures. And I've definitely done that.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's interesting as you talk about and tell that story about consulting with Springboks and consulting with, you know, super rugby level players and players that have played such at a high level in South Africa. It's kind of interesting because there isn't in the United States, there isn't yet a foundation where a lot of these youngsters, when they have to make those decisions or they have to make a determination about where to go to uni and continue the career, there's not a lot of guidance right now. I mean, we see, of course, you said you had told us, you know, before we went to camera that you were working in sports psychology,
yes,
doing a bit of work with the New Trier High School lads. Patty Ryan, of course, is coaching them.
Yes.
I mean, that's one of those rarities that there's just not a lot of professional level players. Patty himself is, you know, capped with the United States that can provide that guidance.
Yes.
So you had kind of a, I don't know if it was a unique experience coming from the rugby environment in South Africa, but it's certainly unique for a youngster here in the United States playing the rugby trade.
Yeah, I definitely think when I was playing in South Africa in my kind of late teens, early or till about 21, that was definitely something that helped me a lot, just having those players around me. Then, you know, moving to the UK, I probably didn't have that same feeling with that type of stuff. You know, I had older players and teams that were great guys, great teammates. But, you know, as a young player, you kind of seek out that mentorship rather than having someone come to you and say, what's going on, you know? So I think when I was in South Africa, I definitely had more of that. And that's actually encouraged me to go into this role of being a mentor to younger rugby players and kind of, yeah, having that, like, kind of the lessons I've learned in my career, good and the bad, to kind of guide others.
I love that. I'm a high school teacher, educator myself. So the fact that you're giving back to young players and hoping to develop that next generation, yes, if you will, is awesome to see. But let's continue to focus on you. You played with the Newcastle Falcons in 2018, 2020. Of course, we know that in 2023, 2024, they started to have the financial trouble under Seymour Kirby. Did you see signs of this when you were at Newcastle, signs that things weren't quite where you'd have liked them to, that people would have liked it to be?
Well, it is tough to say, but I think within the Premiership over the last 10 or however many years, you know, there's always been talk about Newcastle are kind of struggling, but they've always kind of held it together and been playing competitively in the league. The last few years have been tough for them, but I see there's news of a new investment from Red Bull, mm-hmm, which is obviously positive news. And, you know, for me, it was, we talk about moving from South Africa to the UK, but just from me moving from London to Newcastle was literally like moving to different countries, where London, you got, it's, you know, it's very multicultural, you know, very soccer loving city. Not that Newcastle isn't, it definitely is, but like, you know, I felt a very different kind of culture and feeling when I moved up to Newcastle, similar to moving from, you know, South Africa to England. So, I really enjoyed that experience at Newcastle, you know, a lot of down to earth people, hardworking. So hopefully they can turn that around, and it's a great, great, great area, great part of the UK.
Yeah. I hope so too, I just think, it seems like everywhere except for France, you know, rugby is just trying to search to find its feet financially. And it'd be good if the Prem would kind of get back to that level where it's, you know, financially sound. It's a good financial investment, and they would see growth opportunities. Let me ask this, you know, Newcastle and the Quins in the Prem, how did that experience in the Prem compare to your experience in the Vodacom Cup and Super Rugby in South Africa?
Yes. So when I was at Western Province straight after school in their academy, played under 21s there, played Vodacom Cup, bit of Curry Cup. And then Jake White went to the Sharks and signed me there on a 3-year deal. And before I knew it, I was on the same field as Francois Staines, Bismarck Duplessis, Willem Alberts, all these types of guys who are really, really kind of great to look up to. But at the same time, you know, you're on the field and you, it's like you're dreaming about this and the next minute you're there. So I think, you know, it did take a while for me to adjust to that. Whereas I think in this day and age, you don't really have time to do that, you know. So I look at a guy like Sasha Feinberg-Ngomazulu, who's a young player now at the Stormers, who plays for the Springboks. And he, you know, he probably had his mindset was a bit different, where he comes in there and he's the boss, you know. Whereas with me, it took a bit of a while, you know, and it was, but it was such a great learning experience. We played the Crusaders away for the Sharks in the Super Rugby. We beat them there, which is another career highlight. And yeah, that South African rugby passion, you know, definitely, you know, I was a fan in the stands, as I said, and then all of a sudden you're playing professionally, which was amazing. And then moving to the UK, I went on a loan deal in the off season just to get some game time. Obviously having the passport, there was an injury at Harlequins, and, you know, I played 10 games within a few months. So I played a lot of rugby, and then Jake White left the Sharks, and I was loving Harlequins so much, I ended up negotiating to stay, you know, and then was there for the next, yeah, so the season there, and then another three seasons. So that was amazing. The Quins fans are amazing. You know, it's in South Africa, we have very big stadiums, as you know, Steve, 40,000 seaters, whereas in the UK, the Stoop is about a 15,000 seater and you get about 16,000 there. So it's like loud, you know, next door to the iconic Twickenham. And it was such a great experience. Loved it a lot, made a lot of friends, and having that connection with some of my friends at the school I went to on exchange was also easy for me to settle in, you know, and all these different teams I've been in. You know, I always say to people, on day one, you have 40 friends.
Yeah,
you know, you walk into other jobs and it takes months to kind of get to know someone, go for a coffee, but you kind of, with the rugby environment, you bound on a, you know, you have a plan and you have a goal, and before day five, you have 40 friends. So all these different teams I've been in, it's been amazing, and I've learned so much from my elders.
I got to ask, now obviously you have a connection with Jake White, Jake's son, Wes White. Did you know Wes when he was a wee lad?
Yeah, so he went to Bishops too. He was 2 years below me. Yeah.
Okay.
Very good rugby player. He did well in the university leagues here in America. And yeah, I've known Jake. I think he once came to one of my under 13 games at my prep school. So yeah, I've kind of known him, since then, and whenever we've played maybe against them, I've had a conversation, or obviously played under him for a year, and you know, I definitely learned a lot from Jake, and he's had a really good coaching career.
Yeah, my rugby podcast partner, big guy, big shout out, he's gonna never let me live this down, because I never fail to mention Lindenwood University. That's where Wesley went to school. My son played with him both there and at the Bombers, St. Louis Bombers. So, nice. Very familiar with Wes, and I haven't had the pleasure of meeting Jake yet. Hopefully sometime soon.
But, I mean, if Jake told sure you, Steve, have. Yeah.
He would love this room and appreciate it. And he is definitely one of the, I think one of the coaches that culturally changed and inspired the way South Africa plays rugby now. And, you know, from being before he was a Springbok coach, and certainly post, he's been someone that has brought a lot of people in from multiple areas of the country, and then really molded them into something quite special. And for me, he's one of certainly one of the legend coaches in world rugby, not just South African rugby.
I got to ask both of you guys. So while we're on the subject, I don't mean to take it too much away from Tim and your career and, you know, your career path, but I got to ask this, you know, Jake White, obviously 2007, that big World Cup win, right, kind of sets the table in a lot of ways for where South Africa's at now. I would say it's kind of what you're alluding to, yeah. Steve. How does he compare to Rassie? In kind of the, you know, if we're talking about the Mount Rushmore of Springbok lore, you know, you've got the Mount Rushmore, you got four or five heads up there that you're going to carve in a Table Mountain, right? How do you compare those two?
I'll let you go first.
Well, I think obviously post-apartheid time has gone on now in terms of what's it been about 30 years, where Rassie has this multicultural team of the new South Africa, and he's managed to really get that culture on a very high level, and everyone loves each other, you know. Whereas with Jake, he might have, you know, the kind of, motivation to win and stuff is, I feel like it's higher now, and it brings our country even more great, like greatly together. I mean, what 1995 did for our country was also amazing, but I feel like there was the 95 high and then a little bit of a dip, and then Jake kind of came back, and then Rassie's carried that on. So I think obviously sounds like I'm hyping Rassie up more, but we're in that present time of Rassie's era where we've won two World Cups in a row. But that obviously also comes from Jake's work. So right. I think that they are pretty similar. And you know, I think Rassie coached a bit more domestically before he was a Springbok coach, and he went over to Ireland and came back. So I think all those experiences too have kind of built South African rugby to where it is now, and Jake's definitely a part of that.
I think that it's two different times of South African rugby, where Jake White was very much a white rugby with some black players back in those days, and certainly there was a transition. Rugby wasn't the South Africa's number one sport, and you know, they had to earn their keep, and those players were phenomenal. But I think what Rassie has done for South Africa and South African rugby is that he has created a culture across the entire country where South Africans on a Friday before a rugby game all wear their Springbok jerseys to work, to school, to the office, to whatever it is. It's Bok Friday. And everybody from the janitor to the CEO of a company are all wearing the same. We are united as one. And I think what Rassie has done for South Africa is incredible. You know, I've often said to my friends that Nelson Mandela had a dream for South Africa, and Rassie delivered it, where he used rugby to unite the country. And we are now colorblind, and we are a rainbow nation because of rugby is now something that everybody plays. Everybody wants to play in the townships, in the private schools, female rugby. It's everything is now rugby in South Africa. And you can't drive down a highway in South Africa without seeing multiple billboards of Rassie and the Springboks everywhere. It's now part of our DNA.
Nice. Well, and you know, as both of you guys talk, what I think is interesting is that 95 World Cup was iconic, right? But if you talk to mates like my Kiwi friend, Bryce Elliott, and you know I'm talking about you, mate, they always bring up, well, we were poisoned and we were this and we were that. Whereas I think at 2007 and now, you know, in 19 and 23, like, there's no question that South Africa is on top of their game and has been on top of their game for quite some time. So both coaches have done immense things for the rugby culture in South Africa and, you know, establishing South African rugby, Springbok rugby, as one of the teams you have to beat if you want to be considered a top team. Like Ireland's always looking to contend. They have to beat the Springboks in order to, you know, kind of dethrone them, if you will. So it's good to see that kind of spirit in South Africa.
It's truly wonderful. And the what has changed in South Africa or for world rugby is that instead of South African rugby drawing on a population of, let's say, 10 million people, whites and some colored players and some black players, we really now are drawing on a population of 70 million South Africans that are incredibly powerful, incredibly fast, and incredibly skilled, and everyone fits into the culture of rugby according to their uniqueness. But to what Tim was saying, everyone's part of a team. Everyone knows the plan, everyone knows their structure, and everyone won't let the man down on their left or right hand side. And that's the culture of South African rugby from schoolboy level now all the way through. Right. Right. And it's incredible to watch what's been happening. And I think it's going to be very difficult for rugby playing nations around the world to beat South Africa. Obviously, I'm slightly one-sided. But I think it's because the fundamentals of the game from grassroots level, I'm talking six-year-old boys that are brought into a culture of team, and the spirit of playing for one another builds into the national team. And now, as Tim said, you show up and immediately you have 40 best friends. Nice. because you know how to work with the team.
So, Tim, let's kind of focus back on your career. Obviously, we've talked about you living and playing in South Africa in the UK, but you also played in Tokyo. You played in Edinburgh. How does living and playing in all those locations, how does that compare with living and playing here in Chicago?
Well, I suppose playing South Africa is closer to my heart in the sense that I'm from South Africa, but then going to a place like Japan on an adventure with my now wife, which is eye-opening, you know, different cultures and how they support teams, how they go about all that, how they, you know, get behind a team. It's amazing. And, you know, I did a year in Japan. Then I went back to the UK where I hadn't actually signed with a team yet. My wife got a job at a law firm there. And then I did two short-term deals at Edinburgh for World Cup cover and then Saracens. And those are just short-term deals. But yeah, the Japan 1 year and then coming now to America for this season, it's been amazing. And, obviously like, the game's more established in countries like South Africa and the UK, but it definitely is growing here. Japan, you know, what the 2019 World Cup did for Japanese rugby. I mean, everyone wants to play there now. That's like on everyone's list to go play. And it's not just the rugby. It's the way the people are there, the culture, the respect they have. And rugby also has those morals and values. So I think that's a match made in heaven, you know, rugby in Japan. And it was an amazing experience. I wasn't actually in Tokyo. We were in an area called Karia, which is south of Nagoya, and it was quite an industrial area. We were known for the forklift. We were the Toyota forklift they make. That was the kind of industrial area we were in. So yeah, it was really good there. You know, and like going for a walk down the street or going to get your local ramen dinner with my wife was a highlight rather than being in like a London or a Chicago where, you know, your highlights are a bit more busier and more that city slicking type lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So, you know, having a difference in lifestyles has really also helped me grow as a person and understand, you know, do you like a bit of the more quiet side of things? Do you like the more hustle bustle of the city or a bit of a combo? And then, yeah, back to the rugby in Chicago. You know, we play at the SeatGeek Stadium, probably the best stadium in the league. We get 5,000 fans, loyal fans that come out there. Half of them don't know the rules of rugby, but that's actually quite an exciting part, that the intention to go to a game that you don't really know about, but you want to know and you want to know more, for me is a goosebump feeling type thing, you know. And I think with the rugby growing here till 2031, where the World Cup will be, and hopefully South Africa win a, would that be a sixth title if we win the next one? You know, hopefully the league and everything can build towards that moment. And it definitely will post that. But yeah, no, my year here in Chicago has been amazing. Guys like you have passion for the game, and that's what it takes to grow the game, you know, whereas in South Africa, we have a whole nation growing the game at the moment. Whereas in America, they're like individuals like you that are pushing the game and people are all buying into that, which is amazing.
So I got to ask, I think the tradition has been that fans can come down on the pitch after the game and talk to players and interact. It's especially good after a win, and it was an especially good win in Houston, which I'll get to in a minute, but against Houston, excuse me. But have you ever experienced anything like that before as a player?
When I was a youngster, and actually we have one of these bobbleheads here, when I was young, when I went to my dad to Newlands and sometimes my friends in the scholar stand, we would wait outside the fences for like an hour and a half. And the Stormers players, particularly Jean de Villiers here, who I ended up actually being in the Stormers squad with, I didn't actually play a game with him, but I would wait 1.5 hours for my hero in Jean. And that memory sticks with me forever. So I would wait for him for an hour and a half, and we'd walk. He'd do his pool recovery at the gym about 100 meters from the stadium. And that's probably not a career highlight, but like a life highlight with rugby, those types of things. So like, you know, for the SeatGeek to open up the stadium to all these kids to chat to their players, who knows what messages and what feelings that gives them for the next 20 years of their lives, you know, whether that motivates them to play sport or be healthy or be active or actually play rugby. You know, and I've come from that environment. So that's kind of the similarities there.
Yeah, I love that. And I always appreciate when the Hounds post the pictures of the players with the kids, because it, it really sends that message of positivity about the sport and what what it can bring for young and aspiring rugby players in the United States as we progress toward 2031 and 2033. I gotta ask about a little bit about this season. Of course, early on you're hampered by injuries. James English, the CEO of the Chicago Hounds, talked a little bit about your carrying an injury into the season. I know early on you personally wanted to show your value, and just, you know, with that injury, it's always kind of frustrating. So did you feel pressure when you first got here with that juxtaposition of being that keynote signing, but also carrying that injury in and knowing that you had to kind of take care of your body too?
Yeah, well, I mean, rugby is not only about playing on the field. So when I came here with my injury, I had about 3 or 4 weeks to go till that was over and or fully recovered. And, you know, I try to buy in into the leadership stuff and the meetings and chatting to Chris Latham and Noel Reed about tactics and all that kind of stuff. But as you say, yeah, it definitely was hard because you're coming here as a foreign player from South Africa, and there's a little bit of expectation, you know. So that was pretty hard. And then when I was back from that injury, I tweaked my hamstring. You know, and I kind of got rushed back for that first game, tweaked it again. So, you know, it was a pretty hard start for me. And then while I was away there, they'd signed another fly-off who played really well in Chris Hilsenbeck. And then I moved to fullback, you know. So it was a challenging season, but actually a very rewarding one. We were very unlucky not to make it over the finish line in the final this weekend. We obviously lost by 1 point, which we'll get to against New England. Yes, but so those early stages were very tough. But you know, we built such a great culture at the Hounds this year that leaves me in a positive light for next season. And it was great.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
So I got to ask, because you mentioned it, which do you prefer, 10 or 15?
Well, I think when it comes to like my individual game of running and stuff, fullback's a bit better. But, you know, putting the wingers away is also very satisfactory and satisfying for me. But I do probably prefer fly half because, you know, you're that link between the forwards and the backs. And, you know, yeah, I played one or two games there this season, and they, you know, I think they saw me as that link with the young wingers and Peyton Wall and Noah Brown. So I kind of worked well with him in the back, and that was great. But yeah, I mean, I sometimes tell a coach, I'll play prop if you want me to, you know, I just want to be on the field. So I have a favorite in fly off, but I'm happy to play fullback too. I enjoy that.
Yeah. I really felt like when you went back to fullback, it created the team gelled a bit more. You just brought some energy coming from the back. Your vision and skill set was really played really well to finding that space and finding some opportunities to put other guys into space. I forgot which match it was. It might have been the Houston match, but I think you sprung was it Noah for a try? You had a nice little offload for Noah
against Carolina. Yes.
Yeah. And I mean, again, that your skill set was really clearly on a level there that the Hounds benefited from without question. I mean, that was next level. And then that hit in Houston, we needed the win. It was here.
It was Old Glory.
Oh, it was an Old Glory?
Yeah, in the semifinal.
All right. So semifinal, critical part of the match. I think it was still pretty tight at that point. Old Glory's one of their wings is running up the sideline, and you came from that fullback position. Just the pace and the pressure, and then man, put a great hit. And I don't remember the player. Do you remember who it was?
I think it was their right winger. But we were more than 7 points ahead. But for me, it was the way the crowd reacted, and you know, our loyal fans were there in their numbers, and it was quite a cool moment, and they all kind of erupted and with loud, like, I don't know if they were getting into the DC player or just saying like good stuff, Tim, but it was quite a fun moment. And yeah, no, it's been such a great season. We had our kind of farewell dinner last night, and everyone was in good spirits. So yeah, it's been good.
I mean, that hit, you took him in a touch, ball dislodged. We got the line out. It was just outside, I think, our 22. It was just that. It defined that game, the physicality of that game, and defined what I think the Chicago Hounds were all about this season. And so, I mean, for me, that hit was defining.
Thank you.
So I appreciate, especially seeing it, you know, on the sidelines. So I got to ask, would you rather big tackle or big try?
I mean, if the Bishop's boy in me is probably like a big try, because we don't tackle much there. We just run the ball. But as the career's got on, I think you do gain a lot of confidence from a good tackle. So I'm actually going to say a good tackle.
Okay, solid. I like that. All right, so we have to talk about it, folks. Obviously, 21-20, a loss in the Eastern Conference semifinal to the two-time champs, New England Free Jacks. Tough game, physical game. What were your takeaways from that, Tim?
No, I feel New England, they get under your skin, and that's when they're at their best. Yeah. And I feel like in that game, they probably got under our skin for about 10, 15 minutes of that game. You know, whereas the game, we play them twice in the season, we won the first game, and in the second game, they probably got under our skin, as I said, for a bit more, for a bit longer. And then those little momentum swings come from that, you know, where I felt this last game, the momentum was on our side. There were one or two swings towards their side in the second half. Mm-hmm. And then we came back a bit at the end. And then obviously we missed winning in the last minute. But yeah, I mean, we couldn't have put ourselves in a better position to have won that game. And, you know, it was quite funny that we went out afterwards just for a few drinks to celebrate the season. And they were at the same place, in the same position, having lost to New England. And it was a bit of a deja vu moment. And you could see the guys were very down, which shows that they care so much about, we care so much about kind of winning this competition. So, I mean, we definitely, the energy is that we've taken a huge step in the right direction. And, I know the owners and the management of the Hounds, they had a 3-year plan to make our team, kind of nationally a great team, and then within 5 years a global brand. You know, I think they're definitely heading in that direction. You know, and as you spoke about earlier, you know, rugby in different areas financially struggling and stuff, I think America's one place where the game can grow. Sorry, I'm going a bit off topic here, but no, it's definitely exciting times, and we hopefully get New England next year again, but at home.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I'd love to get them at home. So let's talk about on the other side. Did you watch that Houston-Utah match then the following day, or was it a little, for me, it was a little tough to watch. Or sorry,
it was later on the same night. Yeah, I didn't actually watch it because I was a bit defeated. But yeah, I mean, we beat Houston twice in the season, so we would have been itching for this final this weekend. But, you know, that's how sport is, and everyone would be doing it if it was easy. So, yeah. Yeah, it's a bit of a pill to swallow.
Yeah, it was that match, and we're not going to dissect either one of the matches too awful much. But in that match, I mean, Houston did what I'd hoped that the Hounds would have done against New England. Perhaps if that try saving tackle on Bryce wouldn't have happened, perhaps that was the momentum stopper. You know, just because it was such a great tackle unfortunately, we, you know, that would have taken the crowd out of it. On the other side, against Utah, I just think Houston got on top of them so quickly that it took Utah out of their game. It took Utah fans, because it was in Utah, out of the game, and it really allowed them to put their foot on the throats of Utah. So I'm going to go around here. We, of course, have the final, New England, Houston. It's in Pawtucket. Talked to Will Hooley a little bit. He expects a great crowd, obviously, because it's about 45 minutes down the road from Fort Quincy. What do we expect? I mean, we haven't heard from Steve in a bit. So, Steve, what do you expect this weekend?
You know, I think it's going to be a close game. I think it's going to be a game that is going to be in the teens. I think they're going to fight it out up front. I think I think it'll be more of a conservative play rather than finals. But I think champion teams find a way. And I think that Houston are going to come off second best in the final, because teams that have won champions, that find a way, that, as you said, get under your skin, they turn it in the last 20. And I think Houston are going to lose out this weekend.
And it's kind of interesting, because we have obviously Houston very much under the Springbok or the South African influence with Pote Human as their head coach. And then, of course, the Kiwi influence on the other side. We've got Ryan Martin. Sorry, I'm drawing a blank here. On the other side. So it makes for an interesting matchup in a lot of different ways, you know, Baca versus Kiwi. But you make some interesting points. Tim, what are you thinking here as you think about this final? You beat Houston twice, you know, we had three matches against New England, you know, 1-2. So what are your thoughts in the final?
Well, I think New England being back-to-back champions is giving them that last 20 minutes of confidence in these games to kind of fall back on that confidence to finish the games off. And the fact that the stadium where the final's been played in Rhode Island is very close to Boston, as you said, could do New England a, you know, kind of home ground advantage. So I'm also going to go with New England.
Score?
22-14.
Oh, wow. An 8-point difference.
Yeah.
Okay. Steve, you said it's going to be in the teens?
Yeah, I'm thinking 19-13, somewhere around there. I think it's
so 6 points.
Going to be down to bounce of the ball, but I think they're going to push it through. I think they'll win on penalties.
On penalties. Yeah, it's going to play an important role. I've got New England 23-20 in my Super Brew pick to give it away. I've got 23-20. I think it's going to be a tight game. I think there's going to be some key penalties there. I agree. And it's definitely going to come down to that crowd that they're going to bring over from Fort Quincy. So it should be an exciting day of rugby. Should be an exciting weekend. Great to see a lot of fans, even if they're not a fan of either of the two teams. Fans are heading out there. I know, shout out to Dan and Sheila Falcon, my two great friends that are heading out there. Matt Cartwright, Seattle fan, heading out there. I know there's a couple other fans from the our group that are heading out to watch the final. So it's exciting, and I'm looking forward to it. But let's turn our attention towards kind of the last leg here. And like we talked about earlier, we're in a Springbok shrine, if you will. It was funny when Tim walked in this room, I don't think he expected quite what he saw. And we have the backdrop of the golf course and a window here. Hopefully we'll turn this camera a little bit, but this floor to ceiling and literally ceiling is filled with rugby memorabilia that's predominantly Springbok related. And so what we want to do is just talk a little bit about Steve and his collection and kind of go around the horn at some point here and talk about some of the favorites that we have, having had a chance to look around here. So I want to do that. But first, I want to explain, you know, I like Tim, was in shock at how much Steve has. And he has a special collection. Like he said earlier, three max is how many of these pieces are. There's one, two, or three, and he has one, two, or three. Now, I want to ask, because this came up earlier, I think Tim was asking about it. Do you have one of the preeminent Springbok collections outside of perhaps like a South African rugby union collection?
I think I've got to be in the top three in the world in uniqueness. And the fact that most of my collection is, as I said, one of three, and every jersey and everything I have is a complete signed set. So if the entire team doesn't sign a jersey, I won't get it. So it has to be a complete signed set, which is very hard to do in the memorabilia world. Is to get everything complete, and so. That uniqueness adds the value to the room and to the shrine and to the joy as I look around, knowing that no one else has this. And I would think that Percy Montgomery probably has one of the greatest rugby shrines. His entire house is a shrine. I think that he, from what I've seen, he probably has the best collection, obviously sourced by himself. But I think as a private collector, I don't think that I've seen anything like this. And my Springbok friends have confirmed that they've never seen anything like this. So very proud to represent South Africa in my little world here.
Yeah, it's like if I had... This is what I would have if I had like a dedicated podcast room. It would be something like this. This is pretty impressive. And again, I'll get the camera around at some point here, maybe at the end, just to kind of give an idea of what's in here. But I want to ask Tim. So you've had a chance to peruse around as I was setting up. What are some of your favorite pieces that are in this shrine?
Yeah. Well, the first thing is that if you're a man who likes stocks, if this was a stock, it would be at an all-time high just because of where South African rugby is now. You know, and looking at all the years from 1995 to 2007, 2019, 2023, it's amazing. And, you know, some of my heroes, as I've spoken about growing up on the wall there, you know, some of my favorites, obviously this William Webb Ellis trophy is this golden one right here is obviously amazing. It's kind of, South Africa have won it the most times, which is great. I did mention this Jean de Villiers bobblehead, you know, one of my heroes growing up and then ended up kind of being in the same squad as him. This British and Irish Lions cap, official one from...
Hold that up, Tim. Wouldn't mind.
This one, it was a South African tour in 2021. I was at the Stormers at that time, and I played against the Lions, which was... in front of no crowd because it was at the whole COVID time, but still in the grand scheme of things, what a memory. So that one's great. 2023 World Cup in France, official hat cap from a South African player. I went with my wife to the semi-final against England. So that was definitely a special memory. As I said earlier, that Bankfin Curry Cup ball, which you can show, the Curry Cup was probably, you know, back when I was young, it was the main competition. You know, Super Rugby was growing and stuff, but the Curry Cup's been what since?
It's the oldest championship in the world.
Yeah, exactly. And I think most of my games I've played for any of these teams would have been for Western Province in the Curry Cup. So that resonates really well. Sure, there's so many good things here. I see a photo up there of Theo Kolisi and Eben Etzebeth. Theo with like a king's crown, they're like on a throne there. That's a pretty cool photo. There definitely are those types of individuals at the moment in our country. And then for a little weird one, but this cup I'm drinking out of, it says Bomb Squad, and that's obviously the South African substitutes, the bench that have really, you know, made an impact whenever they play. And Stephen Kitzhoff and Malcolm Marks have started this company. And it's not just because of that. It's more the fact that, like, when players are during their careers, you know, you always have to think of what's post-rugby because, you know, rugby can just stop and then, you know, what's next. And we don't get paid like NFL players or British Premier League footballers, soccer players. You know, so you always got to plan for the future. And I think they've done very well with this brand and hopefully it keeps growing. And, Stephen unfortunately retired over the last few months. So I think he set himself up well. And, you know, So those are the kinds of things that I've enjoyed seeing. What else have we got here? I see you're loyal all around South Africa because you have the Bulls, you have the Lions, you have all the different provincial teams. I know you're Sincilians boy.
Absolutely.
You guys have a very good cricket at the moment. You have half the Proteus team from Sincilians. But yeah, no, this is amazing.
They won't be able to hear you unless you're in front of the mic there, Steve. So I can get up there and talk about it.
I think what's key and certainly one of the most special bits of memorabilia in the room is this is an actual 1995 ball that was played in the final. I hope it's the one that Joel kicked through the poles, but it's actually signed by the entire team, including Kitch Christie, who made a point of not signing memorabilia. So again, the uniqueness of this is it's the game that changed South Africa with Mandela being present, and I have the ball from that iconic moment in South Africa. So I think that's really key. Another key, I think, for Americans is over here on the right. I have a all black jersey that actually has the stars and stripes embedded in it. So when the All Blacks came to play the Eagles, the captain's run, they had this jersey made for the All Black team. And not only do I have the jersey from the captain's run, but I have it signed by the entire All Black squad. So very iconic. That's definitely, I think, the only person in the world who has that. And I think that that's going to be, you know, something that will always be treasured by me. Other jerseys I have in the room, as you look around, I think so. The British and Irish Lions test cap is obviously key in two ways. In that, it's great to have a test cap there from a team that only comes to South Africa every 12 years, but it'll probably be the only test series that was ever played without crowds. And so to have a test cap from a crowdless audience is something very unique. Got the entire British and the Springbok team signed jersey from that same tour. So that's very iconic as well. What else can I point out? There's so much. What's interesting over here is a red Springbok jersey. The Springboks only played in a red jersey once to commemorate 25 years of rugby coming back into the world in, I think it was 2017, and we played against Argentina. And the idea was that they were going to play in the colors of the South African flag. And the first game, they played in red. And they disbanded that idea because there was such a national uproar of us not wearing our traditional green and gold. And not only do I have the jersey, a match jersey, but again, fully signed by the entire team that beat Argentina that day.
Yes.
Another interesting bit of memorabilia is South Africa was sponsored by Castle Lager, and they were playing in France. And the French authorities said you could not have any alcohol advertising. So they changed the jersey to Charles, because Charles Glass was the brewmaster that all South Africans knew created Castle Lager. And so they had 27 jerseys made, and that's one of those jerseys. It was not played in, was one of the spares, but one of 27 jerseys, and probably maybe the only one that's is actually still preserved and kept after all these years.
Is it signed?
It's not signed, but it's just the fact that it was
one of 27.
One of 27 jerseys, and I don't think you'll ever find another game where the brewmaster of a beer was displayed on the chest of a Springbok national or any national team. So again, very unique, very different, great kind of a good storyboard behind it. So it's very, very interesting.
Yeah, I love the stories about the provenance of how things came about. It's kind of an interesting thing. A number of years ago, I scrolled through Facebook, I came about, somebody was selling two very nicely framed jerseys. One was a new rugby league jersey, but the other one was a Queensland Reds jersey from 2000. And that was a year that about eight of the players on that Queensland Reds team, who had the entire team signed it, eight of those players had just come off a World Cup in 99. And one of them was, of course, Chris Latham. So for me, that jersey, not only because I got it for $25. That's how much I paid for that jersey. I mean, the framing itself is probably a $200 frame job. As you well know, some of your pieces are just framed and beautiful. beautiful work. But, you know, it's not just because of the deal, but for me, it's taken on a new level just because now I know Coach Latham, I know Chris, and there's a deep connection now with, of course, with the Hounds. But he was an iconic player because I was, you know, he and I are about the same age, and just watching him play as I was getting into rugby was amazing. So
Rob, I love those stories. What jumps out at you when you walked in here? What was the one of the two pieces that you
there's a special place in my heart. And I think that ball has got to be one of the ball here has got to be one of the tops, obviously, because its significance in South African rugby history, because of some of the names that have signed it. And one of the names for me, and I was a Lucy, but one of the names for me that I don't know. There's just a special place in my heart for Joost van der Vesse.
Yeah.
Even though he's a nine, I think for me, he changed the way nines played. You know, nines had been up to the time kind of small, diminutive players that stayed out of the fray. And he was one of those. He just played off other people so well. He expanded the way nines play for me. And so anything with Joost on it, there's another great picture. It's a artist print, South Africa, Australia, and it's signed by James Dalton. And I'm trying to look at
Gary Teichman, Sven Beste, Percy Montgomery, Bobby Skinstead.
Yep.
Nick Mallett.
Yep, Nick Mallett. So for me, I really like that piece too, because Joost signed it, and I like Bobby Skinstead. I think, you know, he was a special player, unique player, and I still like listening to hear stories about his time when he was playing. So, some phenomenal stuff here. So those are two. I love the test cap. I'm with you, Tim. I like this this British and Irish Lions test cap tour cap of South Africa. We're of course in a British and Irish Lions tour. They're touring in Australia as we speak.
Yeah.
There's a game happening tomorrow. Just the rarity of these, they happen every 4 years and then to, you know, South Africa every 12 years.
Correct.
And I can imagine with the result in Argentina, my guess is that we may even see that extend to 16 years because we may see the British Irish Lions tour Argentina sometime soon.
That would be great. Yeah. They definitely deserve it the way they've kind of competed in the rugby championship now every year, doing really well. A lot of their players are playing in Europe and really doing well. So yeah, they deserve to be on that.
Yeah. And I love what the British and Irish Lions have done with that, with their tour, you know, in London. Am I wrong? Is that the first time they've ever played in the UK?
I think they might've played before. They do like warm-up games.
But the fact I think they played against Japan in 4 years ago in Twickenham or Wembley. Mm-hmm. I think it was a warm-up game, but,
excuse my ignorance.
But Argentina is definitely a force, and people better take notice because they're certainly going to be a powerhouse of world rugby.
Yes, I love that. So those are some of my pieces, and of course, I played in the second row as well. So anything with Eben Etzebeth, I just think he's. I mean, if you're picking a starting 15, a world starting 15 right now. You can't leave Eben Etzebeth out.
He's incredible.
He embodies the athleticism, everything you want in a second row, just a hard man, in every form. So I like that piece cause it's, there's a piece signed by, Eben. Who else is on that? That's,
Victor Matfield. And Uli Schmidt, the original enforcer of South African rugby at hooker. Certainly was my first rugby hero was Uli Schmidt. What a player, what a talent. And one of those people that were just, before rugby became professional, because he would have been a global icon. So another interesting bit of memorabilia here is there's a USA rugby ball that's signed by the USA team that beat Scotland and was the first time that America beat a tier one country. Mm-hmm. And that ball that's on the wall up there is from that entire USA team. And that's That's a nice piece.
You'll also I remember that game. Paul Lasique had a great game that day. I remember, and then he came to Quinn's after that, and we got to know each other. Great guy.
You'll see that there's something that is unique about this bar is I was challenged in how do I display my signed rugby balls, and they would normally have to be in a casing like this. And so I invented a ball clip that allows you to clip a ball to the wall and make it look like it's floating there. So you can actually display a ball between a picture frame, up in the corner, whatever it is. You don't need a shelf. You don't need anything. And so ball to the wall is something that I created in order to store my memorabilia. And it's worked out really well for me.
Are you selling those?
Yeah, absolutely.
Ball to the wall.
Ball2thewall.com. And so I started out for memorabilia, but then I realized that having five kids is that all the expensive soccer balls, volleyballs, rugby balls, footballs that I buy my kids that I find in the garden under a bush during a rainstorm. And I'm going, that was $100 or something. Yeah. Now I can easily clip that ball in the garage to the wall, and it's clean and tidy and nice to store. And so it's got its versatilities. But you know, match day balls, game balls, whatever it might be. But I just created for myself so that I could display more signed memorabilia in my shrine.
Here's the thing: the Container Store had a similar ball display, and I bought a bunch of them because they don't sell them anymore.
Yeah, so I mean, it's
balls to the wall.
Ball to the wall.
Ball to the wall.
Yeah. Okay. So
ball to the wall.
But you know what? I was playing on that. So ball to the wall is something that you know, if anyone's got some memorabilia, you know, it's under $10, and you can display it. Nice. Where normally these display stands are incredibly expensive.
Yeah.
So again, it's just practical, and a nice way for you to again store and display a lot more. Yeah. But what else can I call out here? I think that
that Blue Bulls jersey keeps looking at me. That was the height of the Blue Bulls.
So that was the height of the Blue Bulls when they won the Super Rugby. And then
Mornay Steyn, Brian Habana, Victor Matfield, Bucky's Boerter, Pedri Vandenberg, Donny Rousseau, Furi Dupriya, Wynand Olivier, Zane Kirshner.
The Lions jersey is when the Lions went to two finals in a row, 18 and 19.
Yes.
And that was a squad that never won a Super Rugby, but were in two finals 2 years in a row. And that's the entire squad signed there. So proud of the Lions. And then I think that's, you know, there's so much that. What's interesting as well, if you look at the balls, there's a Super 10 ball that was the beginning of Super Rugby. Mm, then a Super 12 ball, which was again a year later. I don't think that anyone has a Super 10 ball anywhere. I think I've got the only one that's out there. There's the 12 now. It's 14. Obviously, Super Rugby is now gone. But so those are very limited and pretty cool piece of history that's displayed here.
And I got to say, I'm going to pull one piece off that I kind of caught my eye just a moment ago, and it's just different. Right here, folks. I know it's hard to see, but this is their Springbok, their Tiger, ASIC Tiger shoes, right? But they're Springbok themed shoes. And the reason why I like this piece is because I tried to replicate the same thing this year with the Chicago Hounds. I got a pair of Converse with green and white Converse, and then I put light blue, you know, sky blue laces on them just to kind of represent the colors of the Chicago Hounds. So I thought that's a pretty unique piece there too.
Yeah, so very unique, very limited, and
from the World Cup 2019.
From the World Cup 2019, and again, very very hard to find.
Now, how many of there's the World Cup trophy. Now, this is obviously not the actual trophy. It's a rendering, but it's it it's heavy, it feels legit and everything else. How many of these exist in the world?
Ooh, I don't know. It was very hard for me to source. And then what Tim is holding is I actually have an actual Rugby World Cup winning medal. And this is, feel that. That is legit. It's yeah. seriously heavy. And have that as well. So hopefully we'll become as a trend that every 4 years I have to buy another medal. But so there's a lot in here that you know has been collected, as I say, over 30 years, from a signed Cats ball from when Transvaal played with the Cheetahs. And that's actually where Russi played, started out, you know, his career was when he was playing for the Cats and then got into the Springbok team off that team. So again, 1 year they played in Super Rugby, and I have a signed ball by all of that. And then the leather ball that I have over there is actually from when the Transvaal team with Francois Pienaar in 94, they won the Currie Cup, the Lion Cup, and Super 10 all wow. in that year. So it was the beginning of Super Rugby, and that was signed by that team that kind of did the clean sweep back in the day.
Mm. So are you a Lions fan?
No, I'm a South African fan.
Okay. You're from Johannesburg, so I thought
I mean, definitely Lions, definitely love the Bulls. But, you know, I think that, again, as South Africans now, I think that we are less provincial and more national enough, and we just want to see our Springboks thrive. And, you know, I'm starting to watch games in Japan now because I want to see, you know, our international stars mm-hmm. playing over there. Or mm-hmm. And obviously the URC has been wonderful to see our players now playing in clubs like Achilles Neyman winning the URC championship, and nice to see a South African win. I mean, it's so sad that they beat a South African team, but it's again, we get to know so many more players because we follow our heroes globally now, and we are now embedded into so many teams that before we would have just stuck to watching the Lions or the Bulls, and now we're watching everybody. And we loyal to so many teams now because Fuff's in this team or you know Achie is in that team or whoever it might be, and so South Africans, and I think globally people are watching more rugby, which is great for the game.
Yeah, well, and you have players, you even the New Zealanders, you know, Bowden Barrett or Jordy Barrett going over, and during that, you know, interim they're taking a hiatus and from New Zealand rugby, and they're going and playing, whether it's in the UK or they're going to play in Japan. And so now, you know, anybody who's a fan of Bowden or a fan of you know, the any of the Barretts that have gone abroad, you know, you follow that team, and now you got a Japan team that you follow, you got a UK team that you follow, and aside from, you know, the Hurricanes or the Blues or whomever you follow as a New Zealander. So I think that's a great point. It gives us somebody to follow. I mean, certainly a guy like Tim, I don't know, are you contracted for next year for the Hounds?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So you're going to be back. That's good news. Yeah. That's good news. I'm excited about
that's
that.
Awesome.
Yeah. You know, but certainly, you know, that gateway, I'm going to pay more attention to, I knew about the Harlequins, pay more attention to the Harlequins. Why? Because I follow Tim Sweel and he plays for my team, the Hounds. And so it gives me an opportunity to follow other teams. I think that's a great point, Steve, and glad you brought that up. So, this is a fast hour. It was a lot of fun. I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I do. I hope it was worth the trip out to the west suburbs of Chicago.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in my wildest dreams, I would never have thought there's a place like this 40 minutes from where I'm living in America, in Chicago. So, you know, looking at all these South African things makes me less homesick. And even looking at the clip drift down there, that brings back some memories of South Africa. So yeah, it's been amazing. Some Castle Light, Castle beers. But thank you very much. It's been really cool.
Yeah, well, maybe before you leave in July to go back to UK for a little while, Steve will have you out for a proper braai.
I'm here.
That is a guarantee, my friend.
I mean, the fact that we're on an 18-hole golf course right here, I mean, this is invite the Springbok team here. They'll love this.
yeah, for sure, for sure.
Well, maybe we can get the Hounds to come have a bribe and show them this.
Thank you.
All welcome.
Thank you.
There you have it. You're all welcome. So I think that'll do it. We had a fast hour and 10 minutes, but it's been awesome. It's been enjoyable. It's been, I want to thank Steve for opening up his home to Tim and I. And I want to thank Tim for making the special trip out here. All of us worked really hard to put our schedules together so we could make this happen, but it was worth the wait. And I know that I got the right player to come out and enjoy this. I'm pretty sure Giannis would have enjoyed it too.
Yeah, of course.
But you know, with things like this British and Irish Lions cap and the connection you have with that particular tour, make this, you know, all that more sweet, if you will. So with that, folks, I think that'll do it for episode 214. What an episode it has been. It's been enjoyable. It's been awesome. I want to again thank you both for coming. And folks, don't forget, the rugby weekend will be happening at Reggie's November 1st. Be sure to get your tickets. Jump on board. Get in there. Get in the house. Get yourself lubed up and ready to go into the stadium, so you don't have to pay $15 for a beer quite as frequently. And then you can enjoy the rest of the evening back at Reggie's and carry on the party. And you don't even have to drive your car that day. You can just get downtown. And then whether you're staying downtown at a hotel or somebody else is driving or Ubering or whatever, you can get back and forth to the game without any fuss. So check out the link below. And go ahead and get your tickets for the rugby party at Reggie's. Again, thanks to Tighthead, thanks to Guinness, and thanks to Reggie's for putting this event on, in particular, Norm Smythe. So with that, I think that'll do it for us. We've had a great podcast. Thanks again, Steve. Thanks, Tim. And, you know, we're growing rugby one fan at a time, but we will see everybody at the next. Enjoy the final tomorrow.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow and Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.